Hello, everyone. This is Dave Goulas, president of EasyDC 3PL, and thank you for tuning in to the Beyond Fulfillment podcast, where we spotlight small business owners, entrepreneurs, startup founders, and we have real conversations about their journey, what it's really like, and what they've learned along the way. Thank you and enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. I'm your host, Dave Goulas of EasyDC 3PL. And this week, I'm so excited for this episode. With me, I have the founder and the managing director of the Darren Jacklin Group of Companies, Sir Darren Jacklin. Welcome, Darren.
Hey, Dave. I'm grateful to be here and be in service and make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for taking the time to do this.
My pleasure.
If you could, just for everyone that's watching that might not be familiar with your story, can you just talk about your background and your journey and up to this point?
Yeah, kind of. I'll break it down to three chunks: the backstory, the come up story, the success story. So backstory, really interesting. I grew up in a middle income family, failed grade one of public school, was then misdiagnosed with a learning disability and a reading disability. So it was determined by the public school system to actually put me into what we call special education or special education classes. And so failing grade one of public school, I went into what we call special education. And from grade one all the way through to grade 12, I was in special education. So I was in a very small specialized class with children that had learning disabilities and reading disabilities and special challenges in their life. And so, in my younger days, it was trauma, right? I looked at it as very traumatizing, but today it's gifts, it's blessings in disguise. And so by the time I was 7 years of age, I created my first little business enterprise called Rent-A-Kid. I would go out and cut grass, shovel snow in the wintertime and deliver newspapers 6 days a week. And what I realized is that we don't have money problems in life. There's no lack of financial resources on this planet. There's an overflowing financial abundance. We don't have money problems in life. We only have thinking problems. And the fastest path to cash is to go out and solve a problem for other people and be in service. And as a fair means of exchange is a win-win opportunity when you solve problems. So I started knocking on doors, and I knocked on hundreds and hundreds of doors as a young age. And by the time I was 9 years of age, I had my two best friends in my neighborhood, which today, 40 plus years later, we're still great friends to this day. In fact, I just talked to one of my friends just a few hours ago who was part of my Rent-A-Kid business when I was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years of age. And so failed my way through junior high school, got into high school. And when I got into grade 11, I was taken out of class one day by a guidance counselor and a school teacher to the career counselor or guidance counselor's office. And they sat down and they said, Darren, if you graduate from grade 12, if, because your grade point average is you're a D student, you're about 53-54% grade point average. If you graduate from grade 12, what do you plan to do with your life? And I said, I want to travel in the world. I want to make a lot of money. I want to have a lot of fun. I want to make a big difference in the world and serve a lot of people. And I want to travel and build enterprises and stuff. And they looked at each other and said, look, you're never going to get an MBA, never going to get a PhD, never going to amount to much. You know, these are all wishful thinking dreams, but you're never going to go to college, never go to university because you don't have a good grade point average. And they said, guys like you are what we call throwaway kids. Imagine that term today, throwaway kids. And, you know, this age of life where we are now in this, just wouldn't fly. It'd be a class action lawsuit, right? So the thing is that I left high school, barely passed out of high school, struggled with my self-esteem, my self-confidence, my identity. Ended up doing multiple suicide attempts to end my life at driving my car at 85 miles an hour, 140 kilometers an hour towards a telephone pole, premeditated. And on my final suicide attempt, I stopped the car. I said, I can't hit this telephone pole. I just can't do this. I got scared. I drove to a 24-hour crisis line. That was a telephone crisis line service, rang their door buzzer, and I turned myself in. This is back in the early 1990s. And then they offered me some guidance counseling and psychology counseling and training. And then the lady said to me, hey, have you ever heard of Dale Carnegie? I don't know who Dale Carnegie is. He'd be a great mentor to you. So she gave me an address and a time and a date and said, go to this hotel and go meet Dale Carnegie. So I went over to this hotel and was walking around the hotel lobby looking for Dale Carnegie. And the lady says, can I help you? Who worked at the hotel? And I said, I'm here to meet Dale Carnegie. She was upstairs in the conference room. So I went up there, didn't realize the guy had passed on and created a legacy of the Dale Carnegie training system and was a best-selling author of How to Win Friends and Influence People and a few other books. So I ended up sitting in this classroom, right, which reminded me of school, of these people, all adults, and they're there to take a Dale Carnegie training program for 12 weeks. And I was completely out of my comfort zone, completely terrified, you know, probably the brokest person in the group as well. And at the time, and from there, I ended up signing up for the Dale Carnegie Training Program, changed my life, highly recommend Dale Carnegie Training. And then from there, I got introduced to Toastmasters International back in the early 1990s through another member of Dale Carnegie. And I started learning about public speaking and communication leadership skills and advanced over the years, spent 11 years in Toastmasters, which is a phenomenal organization, very inexpensive organization globally to join, but huge upside of benefits if you apply yourself consistently. So those two organizations, the Dale Carnegie and Toastmasters, were instrumental in building a strong foundation for me. And then also having to help me from there to expand myself in terms of my self-confidence, my belief in myself, give me some direction, some focus. And I went on from there to building a corporate training business. So I got a job as a telemarketer. Used to make 400 cold calls a day, 2,000 cold calls a week, crawling across the country of Canada, smiling down for dollars, selling magazine subscriptions for one of the largest magazine companies in Canada. And after 7 months, my boss came to me and said, "Darren, it's a dead end road. We can't pay anymore, can't bonus you anymore. There's no future here for you. So we suggest you leave, go get a stack of telephone books and start cold calling out of these telephone books and start calling businesses from A to Z in the telephone directory on selling corporate training services." It's completely terrifying because I was living paycheck to paycheck. I didn't have any cash reserves. You know, I needed that paycheck. I was so stuck on that paycheck of that security and safety financially. So my boss kind of pushed me out the door a couple weeks later, and here I am, 1995, and I start dialing for dollars, start calling these companies. And from 1995 to the year 2000, I made over 100,000 cold calls. Sometimes I was 3-4 months behind on paying my bills. You know, people knocking on my door, calling me, you know, looking for money because I was behind on everything. And I persevered with a lot of adversity, a lot of rejection, tremendous amount of rejection and failures and challenges, ups and downs. And that built me a global corporate training business where I used to spend almost 300 days a year globally traveling the world, training companies on how to grow and scale. So from 1995 to the year 2015, I ended up training over 1 million people in live corporate training events around the world in 50 countries on 4 continents and 157 of the Fortune 500 companies are my paying clients. So in 2011, I have over 7,000 written goals for my life. And my target is to get to 10,000 written goals. I'm obsessed with writing goals and standards and just really just living an enriching, inspiring life. And I was flying one day from San Francisco to New York on United Airlines, writing down, I wanted to get onto paid advisory boards and paid boards of directors of public and private companies. This is in 2011. And so in 2013, I got a phone call from an ultra high net worth family here in Canada. They say, "We're in the discovery process of looking at investing some money into this residential real estate startup company. Would you fly back at your own financial expense and be part of our discovery and due diligence team?" And I thought, absolutely. So I flew back from Vancouver, Canada, to another part of Canada. And I spent 7 months volunteering my time going back and forth on behalf of the family to help protect their money. And it came time to make a decision. And I said, you know what? I love this entrepreneur who's founded this company. I think it's going to go somewhere. So they came and said, "Would you consider being an independent board of directors of this company? It's got no money, so we can't financially pay you, but we can give you equity or stock in the company as an equity position." So in 2013, I joined the board of directors of a little company called eXp Realty, which people probably heard of it. There's over 90,000 agents now in 24 countries on 5 continents. We're publicly traded on NASDAQ and we're a multi-billion dollar company today. And so I joined that company as a startup company. We had no money, building the airplanes or flying it. And with myself and a team of people, you know, we took it to a whole new level, which I'm grateful for an incredible team of people. And Glenn, the founder, visionary, and just a dedicated team of people from all over. And today it's one of the fastest growing residential real estate companies on the planet today, which is a multi-billion dollar company. So I've had a chance to go to NASDAQ in New York City, not once, not twice, but 3 times to ring the closing bell. And I serve on another board of directors of a company that actually in the next 6 months, I'll be going to the New York Stock Exchange to ring that bell as well. So here I am, a guy that, you know, statistically, if you ran the numbers, I shouldn't be where I'm at. So I made a lot of money with the stock on that company and have done well. And so I built myself a big real estate portfolio across North America. I'm invested in a lot of different asset classes of different businesses. And Tatiana and I, my love of my life, we have our own international foundation for global philanthropy in Canada, US. So we're a 501c3 in the United States and we're a federally registered charity in Canada called Link Foundation. And then I wanted to get into better shape. So I started climbing the big mountains in the world. Mount Kilimanjaro, I've already summited. I'm training right now for Antarctica in January 2025 to summit Mount Vincent, the coldest place on planet Earth. So a lot of training and scenario planning on that. And I created what we see here, E2E, Elevate to Educate, which is a hiking fundraiser to help people with their mental health and create community and connection and shared experiences. So we bring people out to come hiking from all over North America. We do a hike as a hiking fundraiser at hikingfundraiser.com. And we collect the money from that, from registration and sponsorship. And then from that money gets allocated through our foundation, Link Foundation, to then build the school. So we're going to build 100 schools across the planet. We've already started building schools. And we're going to build 100 schools for the next generation to help alleviate children from poverty, to decrease human and child sex trafficking and organ harvesting, bring in clean drinking water, and provide experiential education for the next generation so we can help protect the environment, help take care of our planet, and create longevity and lifestyle for a lot of people. So I've got a lot of things on the go, doing a lot of things, but I love life and I love serving people.
Wow, that's incredible. Incredible story. And I mean, talk about a comeback. So much to dig into there. So yeah. You said you started the first business when you were seven. And it
7 years old.
Pretty innovative idea. Were you always kind of had that entrepreneurial spirit and vision?
You know, I think it came from being told a lot as a kid, being mislabeled and being no. So I, you know, as a kid, I always wanted freedom and always wanted to not be told what to do. And I felt in my life, I was micromanaged as a kid a lot in the school system and by my environment growing up. Back then, I didn't call it entrepreneurship. Today, I would. I love it. I'm a terrible employee. I am a terrible employee because I don't like being told what to do. I like to live life on my own terms. I like to go to bed when I'm tired. I like to wake up when I'm done sleeping. People always say, how do you do that? I say consistently because I like to have my life by design. And I like to have unlimited financial resources. You know, I like to make money or collect money to be able to give me options and choices of what I want to do in my life. I'm not motivated by money. I'm motivated by freedom. And I'm motivated by options and choices. And then I'm also motivated by travel. I love to travel. I love to experience this beautiful planet. So I love entrepreneurship, but I don't like running the day-to-day operations. I step out of the way and I delegate responsibility, but maintain control and have systems and processes and people, human resources that run the day-to-day operations. And then virtually I can have collaborative meetings and collaborate with people using technology as a leverage tool today. So, I love growing and scaling businesses, but having a team of people to do that. Just like when I said earlier, I have over 7,000 written goals for my life. And people say, oh my gosh, they're like, how are you going to achieve over 7,000 written goals? And I said, here's the thing, right? Because in my book, Until I Become, I talk about this book that I did. I talk about most of your goals and dreams do not require your actions. It's all about creating teams and teamwork. Look at any of the billionaires. Look at any of the top successful people in business, in sports. They have teams of people that work with them, right? EXP Realty got created because of a team of people, right? With over 90,000 agents now in 24 countries on 5 continents. It's a team of people. So what happens is when I'm a solo entrepreneur, I'm the cog in the wheel, right? I slow down the growth and the scalability because it's just me. And people say, well, yeah, but Darren, I don't have financial dollars to throw around to hire people. Neither did I. So what did I do in the early days? I went to colleges and universities, talked to their business departments and said, listen, could you bring me volunteer students as an apprenticeship program or work experience program? I'll bring them on for a semester, put in a few hundred hours. I'll train and develop and mentor them in exchange for human resources labor. So there's all kinds of ways that you can create, whether it's college, universities, that you can partner a joint venture with them. But the fastest path that I've learned now in business is joint venturing, creating strategic partners. So, you know, in life, we always hear that it's the how and the who. People are like, well, how am I going to do this, right? I can go back to school and get a PhD or an MBA, or how am I going to do this? It's never about the how. It's never about the how, Dave. It's about the who. Who do I have access to on my mobile phone that I can call right now? So somebody says, man, I want to blow up my social media. I want to get millions of followers, right? Or even like with your podcast now, who can you get access to that can help you grow and scale at a fast rate over the next few months? But the drawback to that is you got to have the systems and processes in place. I'll give you a quick example. Years ago when the Oprah Winfrey Show was on television, right? Number one show in America, broadcasted all over the planet. So I have some friends of mine who've been on the Oprah Winfrey Show. And years ago, I got a phone call one day and they said, hey, we're going to get you on the Oprah Winfrey Show in Chicago. And I'm like, pumped, man. I'm like, right on. This is my ticket, Like this is like the Super Bowl of business for me to get on there to get the visibility and the exposure. So I'm all excited. So I bought this private mastermind group at the time of very influential businessmen and women from all different industries. And we'd meet on a monthly basis, and it was an invitation-only group. And I would go there, and we'd have to give status updates on where we're at. So I come in loud and proud and excited, right? That, man, I'm going to be on the Oprah Winfrey Show, right? The Oprah Winfrey Show. This is my ticket. And I come in there, and I give my status update, and they just butchered me. They ripped me apart on not going on the Oprah Winfrey Show. I'm like, what are you talking about? Because, Darren, you don't have the structure. You don't have the systems, you don't have the processes, you don't have the human resources of people in place, because the conversion rates, if you have 1% of all her listeners and viewers around the world that contact you, like through your website or email or social media channels, it's going to blow up in the bad way for you. So a lot of times people like with podcasts or things, they want to get on a big stage or a big podcast. They want to do these grandiose things, which is great. Dream big, but make sure you have the team, the systems and the process and the support behind the scenes that you can manage expectations and make sure it's an integrity. You can manage all that. Because I've seen people rise and fall because they didn't have structure and systems and process in place.
Wow. Okay. So you've always studied some of your background. You've been very creative and resourceful because you did a lot with very little, especially as you were coming up.
Yeah. No, I had no money. I struggled. I'll give you an example just because I'm a very practical person. I used to have today I've made millions of dollars, but I, in my 30s, I had an R9 credit rating. So let me just give you some specifics on what that means, an R9 credit rating. So with Equifax and TransUnion Credit here in North America, they're credit reporting bureaus, right? They're very well known, very well established, right? Equifax and TransUnion Credit, very reputable. So I had an R9 credit rating, which is the worst possible case scenario of a credit score you can get. I had an R9. I've been so financially broke that I went to file personal bankruptcy and I couldn't afford the financial fees to declare personal bankruptcy, so I couldn't afford to go bankrupt. I've been so financially broke, I've eaten my next meal out of a garbage dumpster in a back alley at a Greek restaurant. I've been so financially broke, I collected welfare for a few months. And I've been so financially broke that I've actually lived in a treehouse that a friend of mine built for his children. And I lived in his treehouse for a few months until I got reset and refocused and back on my feet again. So I've had some financial adversities in my life and failures. And I went from there to becoming a multimillionaire. So I share people say, oh, it must be nice for you to become a multimillionaire. So listen, I was so broke, I couldn't pay attention. Like I was so broke with the R9 credit rating, credit cards maxed out, bill collectors calling me, even knocking on my door. I got my car repossessed. I went years behind on not paying my taxes. And today everything is an integrity, because back then I didn't have any integrity, and then I got selective integrity. And now to me, without integrity, nothing works. And I've learned practically on what works and what doesn't work in my life. And in life, time will either promote you or time will expose you. It's just a matter of time whether you get promoted or you got exposed. So people can hide and circumvent and lie and exaggerate and embellish things. You can do that. And I used to do that. And I got away with it. But then over time, you get exposed. And I got exposed when my weight, that's why I'm working on myself now. I got exposed in my finances. They were out of control. And all these different things, because time will either promote your time will expose you. So whatever we do in our life, pay attention to our daily habits and our daily routines, because it's so important during the waking hours of day is what are our daily habits, our daily routines, because they compound over a period of time and it'll either promote us or it'll expose us. I always share with people, hey, listen, you want to show me your life? Show me your calendar. Because if it's not in your calendar, it does not exist in your life. There's no evidence exists in your life. So if you want to show me what you're committed to really doing in your life, show me your calendar. So if somebody says, yeah, I want to create financial independence, great. Then show me over the next 7, 14, 21, 30 days where your revenue generating activities are. What seminars, workshops, courses, classes, podcasts, what books you listen to, what books you're reading, right? Because your life will demonstrate what you're committed to, because behavior never lies. And so I always go back to what are people's calendars, what's in their calendars? Because what's in your calendar, what shows up in your life. Same thing what I've learned recently in my life. After summiting Mount Kilimanjaro at 19,340 feet in Tanzania, East Africa, your plate, what you eat on your plate shows up in your life. right? So every day when you make a choice, when you're eating something on your plate, what you're consuming in your body shows up in your life. It'll either promote you or expose you. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I love that. Behavior never lies.
Yeah.
So clearly you've had big goals and dreams for a while, and you went through some real adversity, even being homeless at one point. So knowing that you had these big ambitions and you're a dreamer and you'd had success, but then kind of self-sabotage and whatnot, like what was the mental conversation at that point when you were like, you have these goals and dreams, but it's really bad in the now, like you're homeless. And like, what was the conversation with yourself? Like,
not good enough, not smart enough. Never going to amount to much. I'm a disappointment. These are the things that go on. Constant negative self-talk that I'm not good enough, not smart enough, not worthy enough. Those are big things that went on in my mind all the time. And then what I realized, in fact, I just wrote it down here. The other day I wrote down one of the things that was my big driving force when I was younger was, let me just tell you here, I just wrote it down the other day, which was a big thing for me was, I don't believe that I'm worthy of love. I don't believe that I'm worthy of love. And so what happened was, what drove me was, I didn't believe I was worthy of love. And so I would do these things externally to get validation of approval and acceptance and attention and recognition, and then wouldn't feel fulfilled, right? So when I was told at a younger age that I'd never amount to much, never go far in grade 11 by a guidance counselor, a school teacher, I'm like, yeah, and I'll show you. I'll outwork you, I'll hustle you, I'll get up earlier in the morning. And so I started making all these phone calls and cold calls, and I started getting contracts that people with PhDs and MBAs couldn't get, because I got access to the decision makers through a lot of consistent follow-up. And then when I started traveling the world, doing all these corporate training seminars, traveling 276 days a year globally, 3 weeks a month, I was somewhere on the planet, a couple hundred thousand miles a year of air miles, that I realized, oh my gosh, I'm unfulfilled. Right. And so it was a lot of internal self-reflection, realize, oh, wow, gosh, where does the I'm not good enough come from? Where's the I'm not smart enough? It comes from my past programming, my childhood. Right. Because I always say it's three steps. Number one is verbal programming. Right. Our verbal programming, what we hear listening growing up, verbal programming. Number two is visually, which is the modeling. Right. Our environment. Right. Modeling. Number three is specific events. So I'll give you an example. I'll be really vulnerable for a moment. I remember one time coming home from school. Here I am in special education, elementary school, but grade 4, grade 5. And I memorized the multiplication exam. And I was so excited because I got 98%. Dave, I got 98% on this multiplication exam. Came home from school one day. I'm running home, right? I'm excited because I'm winning. I got a win here. Finally, I'm doing something I'm winning at in school because I'm failing in school. Everything I do, I touch fails. I'm a failure, not a winner. So I'm excited. I come into class, I come home one day. My dad was an engineer. And as you know, engineers are really touchy-feely people. Just kidding. Most of them are not. They're intellectual. They're introverted, right? Not touchy-feely. Most of them aren't, right? And so I come right home. I run into the house, show my mother. She's so proud of me. And what do mothers want to do? They want to put it on the refrigerator, right? They want to put the artwork and put the school marks so that on their family refrigerator, right? In the kitchen. My dad comes home from work, same time every day, Monday to Friday, right? System routine. Comes in. I run over to my father, show my dad I got 90% of this multiplication exam. I'm so excited because I'm winning. I want his approval, want his validation, want his recognition, want his attention, want his love. I go to show my father. My dad looks at it. He analyzes the report from the school. He hands it back to me. He goes, well, son, you missed it by 2%. Went and washed his hands and sat down for family dinner. And at that moment, that specific event, like I remember it was yesterday, was that, oh my gosh, I'm not good enough. But in my dad's mind, because my dad and I had a conversation, my dad's 80 years old today, he's still alive, had a conversation a few years ago with my father about that specific event, which he didn't remember. That was many years ago. And he said, you know what, Darren, I always thought you could always do better, son. But you see, in my mind, growing up as a little boy, little Darren, I was thinking, I'm not good enough. I'll never amount to much. So there's certain things that occur throughout our life. And so when we take time to self-reflect, and have a journal or take a course or get a coach or be part of a group of people that we can trust and just really be our authentic, true, vulnerable self. And that's why I love hiking. Because when I take people out hiking, I always say to people, you know, we can go play a game of golf or pickleball or tennis. We can go do some sport. That's great. You see, when I take you hiking, you have to trust me because I'm taking you out in the wilderness. We might see wild animals. You may have to fart or burp. You may have to go use the restroom facilities, right? Out in nature. You need to trust it. Oh my gosh, if you get hurt or injured, then I have to help get you back, right? Or deal with search and rescue or first responders. So right off the bat, when I take you out hiking into the wilderness, you have to trust me. So there's a level of rapport that's already established, which you don't get in a game of golf or a game of pickleball or a game of tennis. So I get to see people's vulnerable, true, authentic self of who they really are. Because if you can't hide when you're out in nature, you can't fake it. If we're elevating and going up the side of a mountain or a hill, you can't fake it. I just see who you truly are. And I've had some of the most enriching, loving, deep, vulnerable, authentic connections with people from all over the world through Elevate to Educate that we're doing and taking people hiking all over the world because people just let their guard down and they let take their mask off and they just be real with you. And it's a great place to do job interviews. I have a number of men and women who are single that come hike with me all the time. So listen, if you want to date somebody, before you date, interview them, bring them out hiking, put them part of the hiking group, bring them out and just spend a couple hours with them out in nature. And you'll start to see their strengths, their weaknesses, their vulnerabilities, what they're good at. Do they exaggerate things? Do they embellish things? Because everything will just show up out on the hiking trail. It's a really cool experience to take people out and just be out in nature and just be out there in their true, authentic body. And they become five-year-olds, seven-year-olds. Little Dave comes out. He's 5, 7 years old out in nature, playing, having fun, having a great experience.
Yeah, that's a great organization you built there and doing that. How did you, because you seem so self-aware and so in touch with what all these traumas and what all these negative events have done. And like, how did you start to unpack all that and change it?
Well, I had blind spots. Like I always do. We all, as human beings, we have blind spots, things that we don't see. And my network of people, my inner circle around me. So I realized, so for example, in my relationship with Tatiana, okay, what I realized was your intimate partner, male or female, your intimate partner can actually be your greatest coach or mentor in your life because they see your strengths, they see your weaknesses, they see your vulnerabilities, they see what you're good at, what you're not good at, because they spend the most amount of time with you, quality time. And so I remember in my early days, I'd fight and argue with Tatiana and, you know, I'm like, I'm moving out and I'm done. This relationship's over. And, you know, I've had enough and I'll find some other woman. I'll just have friends with benefits. I'll just stay single, all these things. Right. You know, and what I realized was that if I went and hired a business coach or a personal coach or a mentor, that they're going to give me the same information as that my intimate partner would give me. And so I realize now that Tatiana, you know, lived my life, my partner, is also my greatest coach in my life. And so she shows me my blind spots. And I belong to different groups of, you know, mastermind groups and collaboration groups, personal development groups, where I get around people. And this is something we do on the hiking trails. Once people get to know you and like you and trust you, and you get permission from people, say, listen, is it okay if I give you some honest feedback? Because most people don't get honest feedback. They're too scared that they don't want to hurt somebody's feelings or be sensitive about things. But deep down inside, we really want to know. Like if there's some things that we don't see as potential risks and liabilities in our business, wouldn't you want to know? In our lives, if there's certain things in our lives that are potential risks to our health or vitality or relationship or things that we're doing just out of consistent behavioral habits, it's like, so I get permission from people to just give them feedback if they're open to receiving the feedback. And so I go to people on a frequent basis and say, look, you know, what are my blind spots? What do you see that I don't see? Because you're looking from outside in, what are my blind spots that you can give me feedback on? And I just stand there and just open myself up and embrace it and surrender to it. It's okay. I'm just going to take it all in. And then I can decide what I want to do with that. And for most people, that's a very, it's terrifying. It's uncomfortable because you feel exposed. But the thing is, it's so healing and so rewarding because, you know, people around you really love and care about you. And I didn't realize that sometimes, like, man, people want the best intention and want the best for me. And so that's how I've learned in my life to constantly keep leveling up and skilling up is like, what are my blind spots? What am I not seeing in my life that other people see? It's very evident and obvious to them, but I don't see it, but they can actually slow me down or hurt or harm me. And that's what I do. That's how I have my breakthroughs. I realized, you know, just a few years ago, I'm 51 years of age now, just 48 years of age. I'm in Niagara Falls, Ontario, Canada one time, speaking in front of 1,200 people at a real estate conference. I'm about to go on stage, and I realize this brand new dress shirt and suit that I'm wearing, I'm about to blow the buttons on my dress shirt. And we're filming and televising all over North America, right, through the internet. And I'm embarrassed. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm now being exposed because I've let my all this fast food, all this junk food, all this ice cream and potato chips and all this junk food I've been consuming in fast food that I've been consuming is now compounded over a period of time. And now my buttons are going to blow on my shirt. And I made a decision that day. I got so disgusted with myself that I said, I must make a change. So I flew back to Vancouver, Canada, called up a few people because I saw on their social media they were hiking. I said, listen, I need to come out hiking with you. I had a pair of jeans, cotton socks, and running shoes. I didn't have any hiking gear. Something I'd see on in a magazine. I didn't have any of that stuff. I didn't have anything in the backpack. So I went out hiking with my first hike I did. It was about 45 minutes to an hour hike. The average person can do it about 40 minutes to an hour. It took me 2 hours and 40 minutes, Dave. I got to the top, and the two people that were with me were both real estate agents. They had to leave to go do open houses. So here I'm at the top of this, let's call it a bunny hill. It wasn't really a big mountain. For those people who are watching, it's in North Vancouver. It's in deep cold. It's called Quarry Rock. People can look it up online and see it. It's not that high of elevation. But to me, it was scary. It was big. It was a big deal to me. I got up there and I'm like, oh my gosh, I am completely exhausted. And I don't know if I can get back to my vehicle to get back to the parking lot. I don't want to call 911. I don't want to call first responders or search and rescue. And I'm embarrassed and I'm disgusted with myself. So I catch my breath. I wait up there for a bit. I get down the mountain or the hill. I get to my vehicle, open up the car door. And I said to myself, Dave, this is what I said. I look at myself in the rearview mirror. I don't want to live my life this way anymore. It's 3 years ago. So I'm done. I don't want to live my life this way anymore. And I just made a defining moment. That moment, I'm disgusted with myself. I'm tired of my health. I'm tired of treating my body like a woodshed, like a rental car. I'm trying to treat this meat suit, this human body. And then 18 months ago, I had a buddy of mine call me up who I've not seen for a while. He's been traveling the world. He lives virtual and he's a digital nomad. And he calls me up and he said, hey, can we jump on a Zoom video call? I'm like, sure. He goes, hey, I noticed you're doing all this hiking. I see on your social media. He goes, my 40th birthday is coming up. And he said, I'd love for you to be part of my team to go to Tanzania, East Africa, to summit Mount Kilimanjaro, 19,340 feet in elevation, 5,895 meters. And I said, no. He goes, what? I said, 100% no. No, that's crazy. I'm not doing that. I'm a hard no. He's like, hold on a second here, Derek. Don't take yourself out of the game before the game's even begun. You always teach me that. I said, no, listen, every man has to know his limitations. I'm just new to hiking. Like I'm doing the beginner. I'm doing the green hiking trails. I'm not doing the seven peaks of the world. And he goes, what have you trained for? What if you have a whole year you can train for Mount Kilimanjaro? I'm like, yeah, right. How you have to understand. That's ridiculous. So he had me call somebody up who was in Phoenix, Arizona, who was 100% legally blind. And this guy has no eyes. His eyes got surgically removed and they're fake porcelain eyes. And this guy successfully summited Mount Kilimanjaro and Mount Everest Base Camp, 100% legally blind. And so he told me, he said, Darren, if I can summit Mount Kilimanjaro and I can do Mount Everest Base Camp, what's your excuse? Because all excuses are equal. I thought, you're right. So I called my buddy Aaron and I said, Aaron, I'm in. So I trained for Mount Kilimanjaro for a full year, put everything into my calendar, built structures, daily habits, daily routines, systems, accountability, responsibility, and reporting, created all that structures in my calendar. So brought into existence and I successfully summited Mount Kilimanjaro. Now I'm so inspired and enriched by hiking. I created Elevate to Educate, right? Which now builds schools. And now I've created a global movement of people coming from all over the world to help me do this. So now I've taken something that I was scared of, terrified of, something I did for my own self-satisfaction to release weight. Now I'm in the best physical shape of my life. Now I've created this global community where we have shared experiences to bring people out to hike for a cause and make a difference. And people go to hikingfundraiser.com. And when they go to hikefundraiser.com, they register for a hike. And now we're setting up hikes all over the US and Canada. So I turned a crisis into an opportunity. Because for me, it was a crisis. My health was a crisis. My health was starting to become scary for my life because I was statistically obese. So I turned a crisis into an opportunity that now serves people and now builds schools for children around the world.
Yeah, that's one of the quotes from your book I wanted to get into. It's, I refuse to see a crisis without a blessing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And just hearing your story, it seems like you had so many disadvantages, so many reasons to not succeed, but you just had this insane persistence, for lack of a better term, and consistency in daily habits. I mean, where does that come from?
You know, it comes from probably just not wanting to, I think it's an internal thing for myself. I can only speak for myself because I didn't have the mentors or the role models or the family members around me that were living extraordinary lives at high levels. Like I didn't know anybody that's ever climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. I didn't know anybody. And I know a lot of people around the world. I didn't know anybody that's ever been to NASDAQ and rang the closing or opening bell. I didn't know people who served on paid boards of directors of public and private companies or advisors. I didn't know any of those people. They didn't travel in my circles. And so I realized that when I would meet people, I'm like, I want to be like him or her. I see some things in their character, right? And what I realized, I think a big thing in my life was when I took a course on integrity. I think a lot of it realized that I thought I had integrity, but I had no integrity. And I had then became selective integrity, was selective. And then I realized where certain things were not working in my life is because I didn't have any integrity in that. Whether it was with relationships, it was with my finances, around my health. And then when I started to realize that when I started to restore integrity and then put systems and processes and structures in place, so I had accountability and responsibility. And then I realized in my life through a lot of training and development that my words create my world. Like, you know, sometimes you'll hear a lot of older people will say, you know, my dad grew up, my grandfather grew up, he'd go to the bank and he'd get a loan on a handshake, right? What if we can live life that way? What if your word became your bond? What if you're that when you show up, that's who you are? You're accountable and responsible for your words and your actions. Complete 100% accountability and responsibility for your integrity. Because without integrity, nothing works. And so I've really, Tatiana, my partner, high levels of integrity, you know, our team with Link Foundation and with Elevate to Educate, our group of companies, we attract men and women who function at high performance, but high levels of accountability, responsibility, and integrity. And that's one thing I love about hiking. You know, I have all these people who want to take me out for breakfasts and lunches and dinners all the time. And they want to pitch me on ideas and they're raising money and they've got some business or something like that. And they're always approaching me. I'm like, great. I'm not going to go to the restaurant or the coffee shop with you. I'm going to take you on a beginner or intermediate or advanced or expert hiking trail, wherever I am traveling. And I'm like, okay. And next thing you know, we set a date and time with reminders in our calendar. They don't show up. It's amazing how many people talk a good game, but they don't follow up and follow through and show up. And then they're like, oh my gosh. And the other thing is, like, I had a guy just last week, didn't show up twice now to a hiking event. And then he reached out to me just yesterday through LinkedIn Messenger. And he's like, hey, can we jump on a Zoom call? I'm like, no, because let's deal with the two out of integrities you've got first in your life. You stepped over it, but you haven't made it right. You haven't restored the integrity. And that's what I realized in my life was I had a lot of broken promises in my earlier days of my life. I had no workability because people didn't trust me because I couldn't keep my word. So when I went back to all these people, I made lists of people that I was out of integrity with. And I went back and had the uncomfortable conversations with all of them. And to restore my integrity, I had to sit there in the fire of the uncomfortableness and the scariness of it. And I got coached on this. You know, I got coached on how to approach it, how to deal with it, how to handle it through some different training development programs I've been in. But I wanted to level up and skill up and take my life to a higher level of accountability and responsibility. I wanted people to get to know me, like me, and trust me. If I was raising money for a business venture I was involved in, I wanted people to come in and because with money, there's three types of money. There's calm money, cautious money, and nervous money. And when people are writing checks to be part of my business, I wanted the money to always be calm, never cautious, or never nervous, right? And so I wanted to be that person of integrity and character that, like, when I get older, I look at my life as, am I living the life I want to be? When I look at the man in the mirror, am I being my true authentic self? Am I being somebody as an example or as a warning to other people? And in my early days, I was a warning. I don't want people to follow me because I'm not happy with myself. But now I'm grateful for who I am because I've really learned the power of integrity. And then surrounding people around me who operate at high levels of performance and integrity and accountability and responsibility as well. That people are their word. And when they're not their word, they're in action and they're in communication to restore integrity. With my mobile phone, I have my mobile phone here. What I do is I live by my calendar. And then what I do is I put in my calendar, I put alarms every day. So to me, early is on time and on time is late. So let's give an example, Dave. Let's say, for example, you and I were to meet over the next 3-4 weeks. We were to have 20 scheduled meetings in our calendar. OK, Okay, we're meeting frequently. We're working on some project or some deal or some opportunity. And we've got like 20 things structured in our calendar over the next 3-4 weeks. Okay, we've got 20 interactions. And 19 out of those 20 times, I'm always early and on time. Like, so I developed this pattern with you that, oh my gosh, Darren's always on time. He's always his word. And that one time, I'm not on the Zoom call with you. Like, you're wondering, okay, is everything okay? Is it something happened to Darren? But the thing is, when I come on, you may forgive me because 19 out of 20 times I was consistently on time, early and on time. So the key thing is notice when you're out there. I'll give you an example. Years ago, I was raising money for a startup business because I know you have a business. I was raising money for a startup company I was involved with. And I was flat broke financially. And I borrowed money to get my airline ticket. I borrowed money from my hotel because my credit card was maxed out. And I flew into this city. And I was meeting with what they call an accredited investor. Okay, he's a high net worth investor. And I found him online. So I'm at the hotel. It's a Holiday Inn hotel. And they have free continental breakfast that morning. Okay. So I call the guy up. And he's like, listen, traffic's horrendous. I can't drive from my office to the hotel. You're going to have to jump in a taxi or you know, a rental car or public transit and get over to my office. And I'm like, I can't. I don't have the money for a taxi or a rental car or public transit. Like, I'm broke. I don't have the money and I can't walk. It's quite a few miles to his office. So I convinced this guy that I'm going to buy him breakfast at the Holiday Inn. That if he comes to Holiday Inn, I'm going to buy him breakfast because for registered hotel guests, it's free continental breakfast. It's a buffet breakfast. And there's signs all over inside the Holiday Inn hotel for registered guests only. For registered guests only. It's all over. Okay. And I'm pitching this guy for $50,000. Okay. So this guy, finally, I convince this guy, he drives to the Holiday Inn, parks his vehicle, comes in. I told him I'm going to buy him breakfast. BS, right? And he comes in, credit investor, high net worth investor, and he sits down and I realize I've got 30 minutes with this guy. So I start pitching and selling him, like just throwing up all over him, right? Pitching and selling him. He looks at me about 90 seconds into this, Dave, and he says, Darren, would you just shut up and stop? Here, I'm going to walk out the door. He goes, let's just address some things right now. Number one is you're full of it. Number two is you have no integrity. I'm like, what do you mean I have no integrity? My ego gets in the way. What ego and pride? What do you mean I have no integrity? Because look around the walls here. It says for registered hotel guests only. You didn't buy me breakfast. You're stealing the breakfast. Because for registered hotel guests only. I'm not a registered hotel guest. You're not supposed to sneak me into this room and have free breakfast. So let's deal with that out of integrity. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is going sideways. I need the 50 grand. I got to raise this money. We're going to go bust with this startup company. And he says to me, he said, listen, the only reason why I'm sitting here right now is because I see my younger self in you, how I used to be with my actions and my behavior. And he says, first of all, I want you to stop pitching and selling me. And I want you to start educating and informing me. He goes, people who've made money, people who are accredited investors or high net worth or ultra high net worth investors, or people who run family offices do not want to be pitched and sold. They want to be educated and they want to be informed. So educate me and inform me. Second thing is I want to tell you, Darren, I'm not writing you a check for $50,000 today. I'm here to mentor you and guide you in a few minutes, so I'm going to leave. But I hope that you realize if you stop pitching and selling, start educating and informing. And next thing is get your integrity in check because you're completely out of integrity with me and with yourself. And he got me walked away. It was like a punch in the face. And I was like, I was upset. I was depressed. I was angry and all these emotions. And I realized, oh my gosh, I just blew it up. But when I on the flight home, I realized, oh my gosh, how that guy was such a valuable blessing in my life because he showed me what integrity was because I didn't have integrity because I snuck him in and got him free breakfast. And I was pitching and selling him versus educating and informing him. And that just from educating and informing people now has transformed my life in so many ways, measurable ways, from my bank accounts to my lifestyle to everything I do. From now, just having a conversation, like I talk about my book, Until I Become, because I'm very vulnerable in my book, right? I talk about what works and what doesn't work in my life, is that what I talk about now is as human beings, all we are is a network of conversations. And everything we want in our lives, Dave, comes from having a network of conversations. And so what I realized with this gentleman is if I just be my authentic, true self, be a person of integrity, strong work ethics, principles, and character, that I can attract all kinds of things because people are going to want to have conversations with me. Because before, people would not want to return my phone calls. People would walk on the opposite side of the streets because I was somebody you didn't want to be around. But now a lot of people want to have conversations with me because of who I'm being, not what I'm doing.
Yeah, it sounds like that was like the turning point in your life at that time to really get your integrity back. And it took you to a whole nother level.
Yeah, because we think we're living from high levels of accountability and integrity until we sit down with somebody who shows our blind spots. Like, okay, you think you're in integrity? Let's make a list. Let's do an integrity checklist here. And let's look at where you're out of integrity in your life. And you start to look at it. You're like, oh yeah, I made this promise to this person. Like just people for an example, just think about what is something you gave your word to over the last 7 days that you haven't followed through on? And the biggest thing is people look at me today and they go, Darren, you have a lot of self-confidence. You know why? You know, one of the ways I've built my self-confidence practically is keeping my word to myself. So I'm like, oh yeah, I got to go run this errand. I got to go make my bed. I got to do my laundry. I got to go do grocery shopping. I got to pay this bill. And all of a sudden I don't complete those things. It's all incomplete. So what I realized was do complete work, commit to my commitments. If I commit to something, I commit to my commitments, even if it's hard. So even when I go hiking, it's pouring rain, it's snowing, it's windy. I don't feel like it. I still commit to my commitments. So many people buy gym memberships in the month of January, right? And then they're like, oh, I'm going to go to the gym 3 days a week, 4 days a week. And then all of a sudden life gets in the way because they don't have a structure in their calendar. They don't have reminders and they don't have an accountability buddy or partner. So if you put yourself into a class, into a group of people, it's harder to quit. So you build a structure. And that's what I always tell people. The reason why you quit is you have no structure. So when you put a structure in place, you'll follow through on that. Right? If you create a financial structure, you have to get to a certain place in a certain period of time. You have a structure with accountability, responsibility, and reporting. You'll get there. Same thing myself training right now for Mount Vincent in Antarctica. I have for the next several months, I have accountability, responsibility, and reporting with daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly reporting. And I have accountability for the coach every week. And then I have a head coach I meet with every month. And I have a support network of people around me. So I have structures put in place with systems and processes and alarms and accounting, reporting things so we can measure and track everything. So we know if we're on track or off track. And that's the key thing. So when it comes to setting a goal, and the thing is with my goals, when I started wanting to do Mount Kilimanjaro and wanting to do Mount Vincent, they were goals. Now they're standards. These are my standards, right? So like I have a standard in my life. I don't do drugs. Never done a drug in my entire life. Totally drug-free. Never even smoked marijuana. I don't judge anybody else. It's not my thing. But I have a standard that I don't do any drugs. Okay. So it's not a goal that I'm never going to do any drugs. No, it's a standard. So now when it comes to my integrity, I set a standard. This is a must, not a should, not a try. It's a must. And standards. I must work out 5 days a week and then get great enjoyment out of that as well. Yeah, so a lot of people should take their shoulds and all tries and I want to do this to now standards. Take your clothes off and look at yourself in the mirror. Every week I post on my social media, my front, side, and back, my body. I post every Wednesday, I post on my social media. Now for the whole next year as I train for Antarctica, my front, my back, my side, my whole body, nothing. Just, I have somebody take pictures of me. Full transparency, full accountability. It also shows me a documented timeline as well, but I get a chance to see the measurable progress in my life. Because I'm exposing myself, but I'm also inspiring other people as well. People don't have to do that, but I want to serve other people and make a contribution to people's lives. And she'll be like, man, if I can do this, I can create a ripple of impact and I can serve a lot of other people. Now, it also ties into my love language. There's a book called The Five Love Languages by Dr. Gary Chapman. It's a phenomenal book. And my number one love language is acts of service. So I get great joy and fulfillment and enrichment out of serving other people and creating that ripple of impact. So I love to use my life as an example. Right. But then also inspire and serve other people and pay it forward and pass it on and make a difference. Because the secret to living is giving. And my success or your success is someone else's miracle.
Yeah, that's inspiring for sure. A couple more things I just want to get to real quick. Sure. You mentioned Toastmasters was a big part of your journey. I recently rejoined Toastmasters after a long hiatus. Wow. I think it's by far the best bargain in terms of self-development. It's like $50 a year. And My club, we have a couple district champion speakers, phenomenal speakers, and so helpful, so inspiring, so polished. You know, can you just talk about your experience with Toastmasters and how it's helped you, your career?
My first time ever in a Toastmasters meeting, I walked in totally scared, totally. The hardest thing is walking through the door, right? Because we're scared, right? Uncomfortable feelings, emotions. And, you know, I walk in and I'm scared, right? And I realize when I walk in the other side of the room and I walk into this group of Toastmasters people from all walks of life, that they're just as scared as I am. That's why they're there to train and develop themselves, become better at public speaking and communication and leadership skills. So my first meeting I ever went to as a guest, I'm there, and they went around the room. And when there's guests in the room, they have the guests stand up and just briefly introduce themselves. I think maybe they do the same thing in your club as well, your Toastmasters club. So I have a name tag on as a guest. And I walk up and I step up and my legs are just shaking underneath the table, right? People can't see it, but like I'm a duck on top of the water, ducks nice and pure, probably the duck's feet are paddling really fast. And so I'm sweating, I'm shaking, I'm nervous, I gotta go pee, I'm really scared, right? All this stuff's going on. And I stand up and I was so scared, Dave, I forgot my name to these Toastmasters group. My first meeting, forgot my name. I look down and look at my tag to remember my name. That's how scared I was. Completely out of my comfort zone, right? So this guy named Frank Kitching, he was 94 years of age in my Toastmasters group, one of the oldest living Toastmasters at the time. He's passed away now many years ago. But he goes, "Young fellow, that's why I need Toastmasters." So that was a defining moment. Now, I also talk in my book, Until I Become, which if you've read, I share a story about one of my experiences in Toastmasters, where I was doing what they call an icebreaker, which is a 3 to 5 minute presentation about my life. And I thought nobody ever wants to listen to my backstory. Like, it's all failures and adversities and challenges and rejection. What are all these people are accomplished in this room? I take the time and listen to somebody else, not me, right? And that goes back to, I'm not good enough. And I'm just looking to be loved. And so what happened was I go do my icebreaker, and we do the first part of the Toastmasters meeting. Then we have a 15 minute break to reset the room. And then we get ready for the formal part of the second half of the Toastmasters meeting, right? First and second, third speaker, then the general evaluator, and then the guests, and then they wrap up and go through next week's meeting agenda. So I'm the first person up after the 15-minute break. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. I can't do the icebreaker for 3 to 5 minutes. Like, I'm terrified. So I go through a whole thing in my head of benefits and drawbacks, and I do a whole scenario plan, best case scenario, likely case scenario, worst case scenario. And what's worst case scenario? Well, best case scenario is, you know, I got to postpone this. So what I did was I went through a whole analysis of benefits and drawbacks of pulling the hotel fire alarm of the hotel. And so I went in the restroom of the hotel. I threw up in the sink of the hotel. I threw up. And then I came outside. And I thought, okay, what's worst possible case scenario? Worst case scenario is it's probably I'm not going to get a criminal record for pulling the hotel alarm. I might get fined. I'll work to pay the fine off, and I'll disrupt the Toastmasters meeting, but that's okay. I can get rescheduled weeks or months down the road. So I went and pulled the fire alarm in the hotel. First time I ever did something like that. I pulled the fire alarm in the hotel. And I thought we'd evacuate the hotel and the fire trucks would come and, you know, we'd go outside and then have to come back in and disrupt the whole meeting. So I pulled the fire alarm. What happened was it was a silent alarm and just a flashing audible alarm and button light flashed at the front desk of the hotel. And then the maintenance person came down and reset the fire alarm, but they didn't evacuate the hotel. But that's how scared I got. But Toastmasters has changed my life. I got a chance to travel all over North America, go to different Toastmasters conferences, compete in different Toastmasters speaking competitions, built my self-esteem, my self-confidence, my character, my integrity. Still this day, in fact, next week, I'm actually meeting one of my mentors who's almost 80 years of age now. I'm actually meeting him. I've not seen him in 15 years. He reached out to me yesterday from Toastmasters. I met him through Toastmasters, and it changed my life. I had one lady who believed in me, Sue Urquhart, who believed more in me than I believed in myself. And one of the speaking times I was in Toastmasters, I did a presentation, and she said, "I believe that we have an opportunity here to mentor and coach Darren Jacklin to become a world-class professional speaker." This is back in the 1990s, and that woman was responsible for me impacting over 1 million people in 50 countries on 4 continents. Now, one woman believed more in me than I believed in myself, Sue Urquhart. I talk about her in my book, Until I Become, and I've been in touch with her a few times in the last few years, and thanked her and shared with her, you know, experiences and stuff. Sorry, it's just 25 push-ups. So I have alarms throughout the day to keep me accountable to do, because I do 100 pushups a day now. So I highly recommend Toastmasters. It's a great bang for your financial dollar. So if you, you know, it's very inexpensive, but if you apply yourself consistently and meet and collaborate and put yourself on the schedule with Toastmasters, it can change your life. Because the more you put into it, the more you'll get out of it.
Love it. Okay, last thing. You had the incredible honor recently of being knighted.
Yes.
And given your story and everything you've overcome and now where you are and to be knighted, can you just talk about that experience and what it's been like?
Yeah, so I got nominated for the Royal Family of Spain. There was over 400 people that were nominated globally. And I got contacted. It was a 6-month due diligence investigation process. I was nominated by not one, but two people who've already been knighted as a royal lady, as a dame, sir, or in the royal order. And went through a whole bunch of interviews, background checks, social media audits. And I got, there's 8 different categories. And I got chosen for philanthropy, global philanthropy, and entrepreneurship. And so today I travel the world a few times a year with the royal family, doing different things, humanitarian philanthropy stuff. And it's just an incredible experience. Great, gives me access to a lot of people. It's changed my life in many ways in regards to giving me access, giving me a seat at the table. Because I've committed to $100 million over the next decade towards global philanthropy projects of raising $100 million using my financial net worth and other people who want to contribute. And so it's given me a different stage, a different platform, and a different seat at the table now. And so next year, there's going to be some big announcements coming up publicly about some of my involvement with the royal order and with the royal family. So yeah, so sometimes people will see me with the crest, they'll see me with a certain uniform on my social media channels. That's the royal outfit that I wear now as an honor to the royal family and to serve people. But I just never in my life, I never thought that was ever gonna happen, but it has. And I'm grateful for the opportunity and grateful for the experience to serve a lot of people with it now.
Yeah, that's incredible. Okay. And so if people want to get in touch with you, follow you, learn more about what you're doing, your charity events, what's the best way for people to do that?
Yeah, you know, you can Google my name. You can Google my name, right? Darren Jacklin. If you want to come out, best way to get access to me, if you want to spend time with me, is hikingfundraiser.com. Just go to hikingfundraiser.com. That's where I'm accessible because I love it. I love serving people. And that site changes all the time. We're always updating it, but go to hikingfundraiser.com. Put in your information so that way we can keep in touch with you and share with you different hikes you're going across the United States, America, or Canada, or other countries. And you'll get a chance to come out, meet me, meet other like-minded people. Even if you're not a good hiker, if you're a walker, you're a slow walker, don't worry. We do things that are family-friendly from all walks of life. It's not a race. It's not a competition. It's hiking for a cause to serve people and support people and build a global community of shared experiences to have a lot of fun and make a difference.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. We'll put that up on the screen as well. And Darren, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
An inspiring story, and just excited to do what you next, see what you do next with all the good things you're doing for everyone out there.
Yeah. So grateful to serve.
Yep. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for now. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Hello again. Dave Goulas here. Thank you for tuning in to the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. If you like what you heard on today's episode and you got value from it, please click the link below to subscribe so you'll be notified of future episodes when they drop. If you would like to be a guest on a future show, you can also click the link below, or you can email us at info@beyondfulfillmentpodcast.com. That's info@beyondfulfillmentpodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.